At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I am Branham, it is Brian behind the glass. And it is a Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Getaway edition of the Killer Bees, a holiday show. It is a Friday. I feel like there's nobody in the office today. It feels like we're working a weekend.
It is a ghost town around here.
Like, and not even just like our office. Like, the parking lot is at 70%. Like, no, that's not even 70%. It's like 40% capacity, yeah. The parking lot. I don't know where everybody is. Today a holiday and I didn't know about it.
Traffic seemed light today, too.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It really did.
Yeah, even like normally getting on 59, it's normally jammed in some of the feeder roads, and everything seemed to be pretty light.
I got here 10 minutes earlier and I left at the same exact time.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the deal? What is happening? What is going on?
You sound like Jerry Seinfeld right now. What is the deal with the light traffic?
I'm not nearly as funny as him.
Everybody lined up to go to Porter to see Del, Paul, and Joe.
Yeah, my parents live in Porter. All the Puerto Ricans out there, what's up?
Oh, my God.
Get it?
It's yeah, Porter. It was a good one.
And I'm Mexican.
A little different. A little different. Not quite Puerto Ricans, Mexicans. There was a bad parking job. In the parking lot today.
It couldn't have been
bad parking. You were fringe. Your tail was still sticking out pretty good. You parked on the end?
Well, yeah. I'm
he parked on the end, and he's got a long back, you know?
So yeah. I pulled like, in as far as I can go, though.
I know. I'm not really. It wasn't you. It wasn't you. There was a Lexus out there.
Uh-oh.
Should I say more? There was a Lexus out there, and its left wheels, its driver's side wheels, were literally on the other side of the parking strip. The other side.
Yikes.
The other side. It was an egregious.
Do we know who this belongs to?
I do not. Probably not anybody at this floor if it was a Lexus.
Brian, when you park the car now, especially here, do you consciously think, is Jeremy going to kill me for this?
Occasionally.
I thought so.
I said it when it happened, but I did the last time it came up on the show, but not today. No, I thought that was fine. I didn't even think about it.
I do instill fear in people. That is a characteristic and a trait that I do have. We'll get to our favorite storylines, Texans, Colts. Bobby Slowick, he had the questionable 3rd and 15. He answered for. Does it make you feel better or worse with how he answered it? World Series starts tonight. Yeah. If your team gets eliminated in the wild card round, is the World Series going to make a noise whenever it is played? New projection on what Alex Bregman could potentially get. Are you paying that? Who said it? And then our guy DJ Bieniemy will be joining us at 5 o'clock. Did you see the new third base coach too, Tony Perestica?
Uh-huh.
His title is Run Prevention Coordinator.
I saw that.
We're going to talk about the weirdest job titles in sports a little bit later. And then also BZ Money. We've been killing it on BZ Money. We also have a new leader in BZ Money. We have new blood atop the BZ Money standings. You can probably guess who it is. If I'm the Rams Blankers, this was an entertaining game. This was a fun game, I thought, yesterday. If I'm the Rams, I'm not trading anybody. I beat Minnesota. Yes, they lost their left tackle. Yes, they have Sam Darnold at quarterback. But the NFC is wide open. That division in particular is wide open. They're only a game back of Seattle. They play Seattle next week. The Rams beat Minnesota by 10. Puka Nacua didn't look like he lost anything while he was out. Cooper Kupp played a good game. Matthew Stafford threw 4 touchdown passes. If I'm the Rams, I'm holding pat to what I got. I'm making a run at this bad boy in the NFC.
You know, we were talking about this yesterday, and the consensus was if they win, they're probably not going to do anything. But I don't think anybody going into that game thought, well, they could actually be a team that could make some noise in the playoffs and do something. When you see the way that team played, they absolutely shouldn't trade anybody. I mean, they've got plenty of pieces. And here's the thing. What they don't have, they can go get. The same way we were talking about the Texans looking at some of the teams that are going to be sellers that have really bad records that you might be able to poach a player for or two that you really need. If the Rams get an offensive lineman or two, and they have everybody else coming back like their two best receivers and their defense is decent, like you said, the division is winnable because the NFC is weak. A playoff position is more than possible. And if they get in and they have a quarterback like Stafford, they can compete with just about anybody in the NFC.
My acquaintance, Frankie, yesterday in the group chat, he was the moron who bet Bronny James over 1.5
That's
points
right.
in the debut and missed a wide open layup and missed a wide open three and lost all of his money because he bet his mortgage on it. He brought up the conversation. Who is the second best team in the NFC? Because I think you have a clear-cut number one in Detroit.
Uh-huh.
After that, you really have a ton of unknowns. Like, Washington's 5-2, but who is Washington? Rookie quarterback. He's going to miss this week. Philadelphia's kind of felt like they've been an underachieving team ever since they lost in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Minnesota seems to be a little bit imperfect. Green Bay, maybe it's Green Bay.
Frisco's got talent, but then they lose Ayuk.
They're in last place in the NFC West after the tiebreakers. Now, it's only a game difference. Seattle 4-3, and then you have 3-3 and 4 teams. I think you can make a case for San Francisco. Now, if you're going like BCS, resume, who's got the best resume through 7 games of the year, you wouldn't be picking San Francisco. But in terms of like if I'm a random NFC team, who do I not want to face in the playoffs? I probably pick San Francisco as the second most difficult team in the NFC. I would agree with you.
You got a team with Fred Warner, quarterback in the defense. You got a strong defensive line. And you've got an offense run by one of the most innovative offensive coordinators in the league that still has plenty of weapons to go to, even if they don't have Ayuk, to the point where, yeah, they've underachieved to this point. They've also played the entire season without Christian McCaffrey, arguably one of the best running backs in football. If they're anywhere close to healthy and just get in, there's nobody that wants to see the Niners, home or road.
You just wonder if all of the injuries are too much for them because, you know, Ayuk's done for the year. Debo, you know, Debo's a good wide receiver, obviously, but he always is kind of prone to injury. What is the drop-off to Jennings? Mm-hmm. Is Pearsall going to be a factor in his rookie year? I kind of like the Jacob Cowan guy. I think that he might be slept on a little bit in San Francisco, but he's a tiny little-bodied receiver, kind of a Tank Dell type. Now, probably not as, you know, not as prestigious as Tank Dell. And, of course, Tank Dell went to this prestigious university known as the University of Houston. But I think you have a bunch of teams that would be in the conversation for the second-best team in the NFC. It's why if I'm Los Angeles, I'm not making a trade. I'm not selling Cooper Kupp. I'm not trading Matthew Stafford. You're a game back in the NFC West, and the NFC's wide open. If you're looking, I think the argument for the second-best team, and people can kind of have different reasons, well, 7 games in, they look like the best. Well, this is the team that I would be scared of the most. I think that you could come up with your own rationale and reasons as to why you think Team X would be the second-best team in the NFC. But I think in the conversation, is Washington even in the conversation?
Not right now to me.
They're leading the NFC East. They're 5-2. They have tied for the second best record in the NFC.
But you've got a rookie quarterback that's hurt, and he's been phenomenal. You just don't know. Their defense has been good, but you just don't know enough about can they stop and play with really, you know, really good football teams. They've got weapons on offense. I just feel like they're probably a year away. I don't think this is their year. But because they've surprised so many people, because year one under Quinn, they're actually playing really good football and they seem to be finally coached the right way, that you can't count them out of the discussion simply because of the fact there's talent and there's young talent and they're well coached this year.
Yeah, I'd lean your way. It just feels uncomfortable to leave a 5-2 team mm-hmm. off. But I wouldn't have them in the conversation as the second best team in the NFC either. Now, maybe they make me look foolish in a month, in 2 months, and we circle back to this conversation. They clearly are the second best team in the NFC. I just don't think they're there yet either. I think Philadelphia would be in the conversation. Yes, Minnesota lost yesterday, but Minnesota probably deserves to be in the conversation. Green Bay's in the conversation. Nobody in the NFC South, sorry. San Francisco's in the conversation. I think it's those four teams that are in the mix to be the second best team in the NFC.
Yeah, I think that the other teams all have deficiencies. And you talk about a Rams team that has been decimated by injuries early, and you didn't know what they were doing early because they were trading off guys and getting rid of guys that have been kind of looked like they would be key pieces to the puzzle. The difference to me between San Francisco and Philadelphia is the fact San Francisco has been, you know, besieged by injuries to key players to where they've been less than. Philadelphia has had everybody as a full complement, And yet they have struggled because of whatever's going on internally and whatever's going on with the offense and Jalen Hurts. So I would lean San Francisco simply because they haven't been at full strength yet, and yet they're still right there to where I think that, like we said, if they're close to full health, then they're going to be a team no one wants to play. Well, Philadelphia, on the flip side, between Sirianni and Hurts, there's just too much, and Saquon, there's too much talent for a team to have underachieved so far to say that they're above San Francisco.
0979, Philly got their receivers back along with the running game. It's
a
wrap.
I was going to say, A.J. Brown missed three games. That's Devontae true. Smith missed the game. They haven't been fully healthy.
They could be second. The issue that I personally have with Philly, and maybe this is a bias of mine, maybe it's a blind spot, although it would be the opposite of a blind spot because I think it's a huge, giant wart on their team. I'm not a Nick Sirianni guy.
Right. That's the problem.
And look, Nick Sirianni was very close to winning a Super Bowl. So maybe I'm the foolish one. Maybe I'm the idiot. Now, I thought the coordinators were very good then.
I was going to say, you're not, because the coordinators made him look really, really good. And a lot of times, look, credit on the coach for hiring the right coordinators. But at a certain point, when the coordinators go, and so does everything that's been good about your football team, it's easy to point the finger and say, Sirianni, it might be you.
Yeah. See, I think that they have the second most talented roster in the NFC. They haven't been at full health all year. My biggest bugaboo when it comes to Philly is that I just cannot stand Nick Sirianni. I'll admit it. I'm a Nick Sirianni hater. It's just the way that it is. San Francisco, I think, has the highest ceiling. They're just nowhere near that ceiling right now because who knows about Christian McCaffrey? Like, is Christian McCaffrey going to be available in their first game of the playoffs? Should they even make the playoffs? Would he be available? I think right now it's not even a coin flip's chance. Like, I would put it at 30% that Christian McCaffrey would play in their first playoff game should they make the playoffs.
Yeah, you would think he'd be back by now, and it seems to be, again, another one of these mysterious injuries where we know the body part, but we don't know the chances and likelihood that it's not going to be season-threatening because it's gone on too far and too long already. I think from the standpoint of looking at Philadelphia, the bigger question to me, aside from Sirianni, is the fact that, you know, Shane Steichen coached up Jalen Hurts to a T. But Jalen Hurts, without Shane Steichen, has looked like a lesser than after he was basically, you know, one of the most dominant quarterbacks in the league and played really well even in the Super Bowl when I was a guy questioning him being a starting quarterback on an above-average team in the NFL. He looks right now like he's taken several steps backwards to where you don't know what he can be.
I don't think he's as good as he was 2 years ago, but I think he's better than he was last year. I think he Maybe. Does
he
have a much better coordinator.
Too.
Yeah, he's banged up. They had Brian Johnson as their OC, which was a terrible hire. Kellen Moore. People are kind of like wishy-washy on Kellen Moore. I think because there's probably a little bit of an anti-Dallas bias, which is fair. I'm not holding that against you. Kellen Moore has orchestrated the number one offense in the NFL. I think that was a good hire. Like, I'm telling you, I don't like Nick Sirianni, but I thought he did make a good hire when it came to Kellen Moore. So I think that Jalen Hurts is playing at a higher level. I think that their offense is playing at a higher level. Plus, they added Saquon Barkley.
People are down on Kellen Moore, though, because he also went to the Chargers last year and it didn't result in the leap forward for Herbert that I think people were expecting.
That was just a tough spot, though.
It was.
Brandon Staley's your head coach
injuries.
Who's defensive-minded, yeah. So you have a defensive-minded head coach that's, you know, you're coming in there, you can't really unleash what you want to do. Like you mentioned, Herbert didn't have the toys that were necessary. And I think Herbert missed some games last year, too.
I think he had a rib issue.
Yeah, those ribs. I think those are the contenders for the second-best team in the NFC. How about Puka yesterday? He's limited. He's limited in the game.
Like,
and all that happened was that Puka got targeted, like, what, 9 times?
Mm-hmm.
7 catches, 9 times. How did that guy slide to the 5th? I Googled it. Google AI told me because he ran a slow 40 and he was injured in college. We put way too much weight on 40 times. Way too much weight on 40 times. Show me how fast he is in-game. Show me if he's productive in-game. I still think it's flawed by these NFL scouts and general managers. They put way too much of an emphasis on 40-time IMO.
Yeah, you know what? We always say, and I think it's in different ways, it's an incomplete science because of the fact that we look at just in our own backyard. We look at what happened with the Texans. We look at a guy like Lassiter and say, you know, everybody believed he was too slow. Everybody believed that he was not an outside corner. And it was, you know, 40 times and things like that. And thankfully, Nick Caserio and his guys decided the fact that, hey, in pads, dude's fast enough. He can do what he needs to do. And I think that a lot of times we get so enamored with, as a lot of people call it, the Spandex Olympics, when they start getting to do everything before the draft, that we don't focus on the fact of what the true football player is. He's a hell of a football player, and he's tough, and he does everything you need him to do whenever his number's called. Last night was impressive.
Yeah, big fan. I'm a big fan of Puka. Fifth rounder. Unbelievable. What a find by the L.A. Rams. Now, the play at the end of the game, Sam Darnold sacked. There was a missed face mask call there. A lot of people were just bashing the officials. And look, I get it. But the officials, they have a difficult job. Like, you have seven officials out there. You have 22 professional athletes. You're going to miss calls. Especially that play, kind of tough. You saw one of the two officials that line up behind the quarterback. One of them's like, he's obstructed. He can't see. The white hat had the best chance, but he's probably looking at the offensive line to see if there's holding. To me, like, the referees are the worst in the world. I saw Ryan Clark bashing the official. Oh, okay, Ryan Clark, you go officiate a game and see how you do. Like, these are the best officials in the world. I hate, they miss calls. It's going to happen, but they are the best at what they do versus everybody else. Now, where I think the NFL can help matters is I think that plays should be reviewable when there's a clear yes/no. There's some calls that require judgment calls, right? Like, there's some vague calls. There's some that have gray area. Like, pass interference can be very much a gray area, which is a reviewable play once upon a time. When the answer to a call is yes or no, I feel like it should be a reviewable play. Now, to get overturned, it has to be egregious and obvious. Like, a holding penalty is going to be very difficult to overturn because there is a lot of discretion when it comes to that. But I think that face mask should absolutely 100% be a reviewable play. I'm not going to referee bash because it's a difficult job. Ryan Clark, you go referee, see how you do. But I do think that should be a challengeable play.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that the bigger thing is, and a lot of times baseball has done this to where, because I've been critical of the NBA, where they used to allow the coaching staffs to be able to challenge, you know, two plays or two or three plays a game, and then in the final 2 minutes or in critical points in the game, the referees could do it. I think that if you're truly in the belief that, and the league is truly honest with themselves and everybody else and saying the true goal is to get the play called correctly, then when you have all the different camera angles you have on television, when you have the people with the league obviously watching the game while it's going on and everything's transpiring, and you can see a clear and obvious miss, I think that there has to be a way that the league steps in, the officials step in, however you want to word it, like they do in baseball, but saying after, what do they call it? It's not replay review, but they'll say after
replay assist.
Replay assist. Thanks to replay assist, whether it be you say it in the league office or in the TV trucks, we were able to determine this was indeed a penalty because that was a key moment of the game and a key juncture when they needed to get a drive going. It was, you know, this was a game-changing moment, as it turns out. I think that you have to get that call right.
I like that idea because how I would fix it is they currently have seven officials on the field. Why not add a sky referee? Mm-hmm. And it could be that, you know, replay assist. And it's only going to be on egregiously missed calls. Like a holding in the box. Like, you're never going to overturn that unless it's just blatant. It can only be something that's super egregious, which yesterday would have applied. Yesterday was super egregious. Like, help out the officials because they do have a difficult job. Like, help them be criticized less. I do think that NFL referees are the best referees that we see. Go look at NFL referees versus college refs. Go look at NFL referees versus high school refs. Go look at NFL refs versus middle school refs. The NFL referees are the best in their profession. It is a very difficult job to officiate. How can you help them? I think that's one really good way. That's the one way that I would help them
most. You know, you remember now when it was golf and they wanted to get away from the fact that you had all these fans calling in things that they saw on TV, trying to call the TV trucks and get them to reverse that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one thing. You're going too far. You don't want the involvement of viewers. But it's television, utilizing every resource you possibly can to get the call right. Again, if the league's true belief is our objective is to get every call called correctly as much as we can,
yeah,
then it doesn't matter if you got it through technology, if you got it through outside league resources. Get the call right. No one's going to, you know, hold your butt to the fire if you get the call right.
Even I forget the guy's name, like that made the sack. He's running away from the play with his hands
Byron
on his
Young.
Face mask. Like, oh no, I screwed up. And then it's like, oh, they didn't call it. That's neat. 9506, you're only going to criticize things that you personally can do. No, I like for there to be a solution. I don't like when people criticize things for the sake of criticizing it and don't offer up something that is better. So that's my biggest issue. I'm all for criticizing things. I'm a professional hater. I'm a professional criticizer. But you need to offer up solutions. If you're just the referees are the worst in the world. Okay, well, who's going to do it better? What are your plans to fix the game? Like, there are other things that you can do that would make those officials better at their job. So that's why I criticize those that are critical of the referees in yesterday's game. Alex is someone who broadcasts football on Friday nights. NFL referees are definitely the best. Yes, NFL referees are definitely the best. That's the thing. Help them out. Like, it's so difficult. These are the best athletes in the world. You have 22 players on the field at a time. You have 7 referees. How are they going to see it all? It is impossible. So add the sky and the eye. Help them. Help them. All right, 713-780-3776. What are your favorite storylines ahead of Texans-Colts on Sunday? 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitter at ESPN97.5. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Beast on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
The Killer Bees. Which bee is the queen bee? Find out weekday afternoons from 3 to 6.
Uncle Carol, did not write this copy. Joe Blank, please don't be mad.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
Yo, this is our Colts. This is our team. We bleed blue. This is our Colts. Whether win or lose, love them. For the shoe, beat the Texans. Horns down on Stroud's turf. This is our team. Go Colts!
Yay! The Colt noise, man. The Colt noise that he does at the end. That is hard to replicate. You want to try?
I think Brian comes close with his Halloween noise.
I don't think Brian has that range.
You don't think I can do a nay?
I think you can do a nay. I don't think you can hit that pitch.
Sure, I'll try it. Me!
You can't hit that pitch.
No, I can't
He's
hit
not
that
even
pitch.
Halfway there.
Me!
No.
Nah,
that was closer.
It was closer, but not. It's still not there.
I imagine. What's that Colts fan name? Do we know?
I have no idea.
I bet you he hangs out on the Twitch of the local sports radio stations in Indy.
I'm just wondering why. I've never
like
heard 7 someone
to 7
say.
Or just on certain shows?
I've never heard someone say horns down for the Texans before. That was new.
Oh, that is weird. I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, in the song he says horns down to on CJ's turf or something like that. Like, I just imagined DeForest Buckner getting a sack and standing up and doing horns down.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine that.
Now, and then obviously getting a 15-yard penalty.
They do the H now, which, of course, is just basically the backward horn.
It's
we see
pretty
that
much
a lot.
The same, yeah.
But I don't see the... I don't see anybody kind of do the upset. That's the first time I've heard that. That's the first time I've heard that as well. But what are your favorite storylines ahead of Sunday's match?
Go Colts!
So bad. It pierces my ears. 713-780-3776. Favorite storylines ahead of Texans Colts. There are some injuries for for the Texans. Some designations have been assigned. Azeez Alshire out with a knee. So weird. Came back into the game.
Yeah, I hate that.
So he's out with a knee. He's not been placed on the IR, of course, but he has now missed 2 games. Jimmy Ward is out with his groin. That looks like a great contract extension that was done before the year.
Man, I questioned it when it happened.
And then Henry To'o is questionable. Everybody else is going to play. Lassiter does not have an injury designation, which is a miraculous recovery if the alleged spatula was in fact fractured like had been reported by one, Aaron Wilson. Only one that reported that. And it would be the fastest recovery from a broken spatula in American sports history, according to my research, if it was indeed fractured. So pick which side that you want to be on. Colts have some injuries, too. DeForest Buckner, though, will play. Jonathan Taylor will make his triumphant return. He will also be playing on Sunday. So what are your favorite storylines? 713-780-3776. What do you have, Blankers?
Well, I think the first storyline to me is, can the Texans continue to have the success running the football that they had in Week 1? We've done all this different scrutiny with good reason on the offensive line coming out of the Green Bay game, but the bigger thing is going to be, can the offense dominate yet again running the football against this Colts defensive line? You mentioned Buckner's going to be back. We know that coming into the season, there was a lot more respect from this D-line than the way people currently view it across the league. With Mixon back, and Mixon basically every game he's played in, he has been exceptional for this team. We know the Colts will focus on it. Can they slow the running game down that the Texans have really capitalized and relied on lately?
Yeah, that's going to be a fun storyline, too. I had that one jotted down as well. Texans ran for 213 yards against the Colts. They toted the rock 40 times in that game. Like, that's a lot. They ran 72 plays in that game, which is a lot. But 40 carries, 213 yards. Mixon individually had 30 of those 40 carries and 159 of those 213 yards. You're right. Like, I'm wondering, one, if the Texans have similar success to the running attack that they had against the Colts. And then, secondly, what the counters look like for the Colts to try to combat that, should the Texans be having that success. Now, what makes things a little bit more difficult for the Texans with the Colts combating the Houston Texans running game is you don't have the luxury of Nico Collins, who feasts on the Indianapolis Colts. Nico Collins is the daddy of the Indianapolis Colts. The fact that you don't have him makes it a little bit easier for the Colts to sell out on the run a little bit more and then just try to defend Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell, which, you know, you need those receivers to have a big game. The top storyline for me are the stakes of this game. Mm-hmm. I didn't think after week one, because I didn't think the Colts looked great. Colts continued to not look great after that week one performance against the Houston Texans. They lost to the Packers the next week. They started 0-2. The Texans, on the other hand, started 2-0. So I didn't think this rematch would have first place stakes. Yet here we are, where this rematch has first place stakes. So that's my biggest storyline, is can the Texans create some separation, have a 2-game lead on the Colts in the standings, really a 3-game lead because you own the tiebreaker, or will you be in a tie with the Colts after Sunday's
game?
Yeah,
I think that the division, not that it's in the balance, but I think that you can basically establish with the tiebreaker that this is your division if you walk away with a win this weekend. But like you said, I mean, when you started out 2-0 and everybody else in the division was 0-2, it looked like it already was going to be your division. So that's definitely a big storyline, because you don't want to put yourself in a predicament that you might be looking at wild card instead of division, or that you're going to be in a dogfight the rest of the way with a team that you look like you're clearly better than. So that's a huge thing that I think I'll be watching as well. One of the other things that I'm very focused on is the fact that the Texans have to be better against the deep ball, because we know the fact that it was there. We know the Colts and Anthony Richardson should have capitalized on at least two deep balls that could have put the game in a different outcome had they connected on one, if not both of them. And that's something the Texans have to be ready to adjust for. As much as Colts have to adjust to Texans' running game, Texans have to adjust the fact that the deep ball was there and they just missed him.
I wonder if that's a price of doing business against the Colts, though, when Anthony Richardson's their quarterback.
Like, you have Taylor's back.
Yeah, like, you have to commit quite a bit to the running attack, where you're like, okay, what do you want to beat you? Anthony Richardson beating you over the top, or the running game to just be able to nickel and dime you? Like, if I had to err on one side, and obviously you want to be perfect, you want to be good at all of these things, but if I had to lean one way and err one way, I'm making sure that I'm stopping the running game of Jonathan Taylor and Anthony Richardson. And I would leave myself, not that you want to be vulnerable or exposed to, you know, the deep passes and the shot plays, but I would err to the side of stopping their running game, and maybe I give up a play or two over the top.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I'm looking at most, amongst several things, I think is the most obvious thing, because it's what the Texans have been dealing with all year, which started in that week one game against the Colts, but it's the twists and the stunts up front. I mean, we've seen it be more of a problem on the road, including that week one game in Indianapolis, obviously also in Minnesota and Green Bay. But we've heard the rhetoric now from D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick all year, 7 weeks. Like, hey, we know what it takes to fix it. It's just communication. We know what it takes to fix it. And yet it hasn't been fixed. So I'd like to see that what they've been telling us week to week in these press conferences actually comes to fruition, and the problem they've been dealing with for 7 weeks, not being able to keep C.J. Stroud upright because they can't block a stunt, actually comes true. And the other thing is, especially now with Jonathan Taylor coming back, linebacker death. And we know Aziz is out. Henry Toa we'll see. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Jonathan Taylor, Anthony Richardson, you would assume the Colts are going to try to establish it quite a bit. You got to have healthy linebackers to combat that, so that'll be something to watch.
That's why I'm okay if you get beat by a deep player too, because the linebackers of stopping the running game for the Colts, Anthony Richardson, scary, obviously. Jonathan Taylor, when he's right, one of the best running backs in the NFL. The Texans are going to be without Aziz Alshire, their best linebacker. And then Henry Toa is questionable. Even if he plays, he's coming off a concussion. So that is something that worries me, that does concern me. And then the other element of that, to what you mentioned, like the offensive line bounce back, like that's on my notes too. And it's really just the entire offense. Like, give me an offensive back, bounce back after, you know, an 87-yard passing game performance, which is embarrassing. But key among those is the offensive line. Now, One thing that I like, if the Texans offensive line's perfect this weekend, I'm still not going to be over the offensive line.
Sure,
I still
that's fair. It's a home game.
I still need to see them do it on the road.
And it gets a great, well, Jets Thursday night. It's a good defense. It's on the road. I'm with you. Like Colts, we want to check that box. You want to see it be in the right, you know, column as far as them being able to execute and block the stunts and twists. But if they do it again on the road on Thursday night on Halloween against the Jets, then I'll consider that possibly the problem is fixed.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, you better do it against the Colts at home. Like, you're at home, no excuses now, and then do it against the Jets, a good defense. And then it's like, okay, we're trending in the right direction. But even if they're perfect this weekend against the Colts, I'm not going to say they're trending in the right direction. They have to be able to do it on the road as well.
I think the other thing, too, is just the consistency of the fact that we thought early on that everything was good, and then all of a sudden it was started with penalties, then it started with the fact that they can't pass block. And so in 1 week, as much as I question if it was fixable that quickly, they may look better this week. They look like they've got some things that they've been working on. But I got to see it over a stretch of, like, say, four or five games to say that both home and road, good, depending on the opponent, the fact is that they've ironed out enough of it for, and they've done it consistently over a number of games for me to believe, okay, now I think that the majority of it, they're still going to happen. There's still going to be penalties and mistakes. But the majority of the stuff that has been really killing them is behind.
Yeah. And the last thing that I have is the impact of Josh Downs. I'm always worried whenever the Texans go up against a good slot receiver. Now, they did a pretty good job against Jaden Reed, but I think that's because Green Bay was trying to pick on D'Angelo Ross, and the Texans went more zone against the Packers as well. Downs did not play in the first game between these two teams. Downs is a very underrated slot receiver that's capable of huge games. Now, most of his big games have been with Flacco and not Anthony Richardson. But Downs versus Petrie, if the Texans are willing to play a good amount of man-to-man, is a matchup that I do not love.
No, you're right. And I think that it's – I don't want to say that it's living – it's living dangerously. It's not like do-or-die stuff, but at the same time, you know, that we said going into the season that their receivers are pretty damn good. I think a lot of people look past them, but they've got talent at the wide receiver position. And the big thing also that we realized after the first time that these teams matched up and what we've known previous to that is Anthony Richardson has a tough time hitting them.
Yes.
So the bigger thing is going to be, it's going to be what you said. And then the big thing, too, is going to be, can Anthony Richardson actually complete those balls? Because in week one, if we remember, those mid-range passes were there. He just missed them. And that's something that is going to be on him as well, because he's going to have the full complement, it seems like, to go to. So, and he'll have matchups that are favorable. Now, can he get him the football?
Yeah, that's going to be watching Anthony Richardson throw the ball is entertaining. It is ugly. There's a lot of superlatives that go into Anthony Richardson
comical.
Throwing the football. But I agree with you. I actually like their wide receiver room. I think their wide receiver room is good. I don't think they put up huge numbers because of the Richardson factor. Although whenever, you know, Richardson didn't play a lot of games last year, they put up pretty big numbers last season. They put up pretty big numbers when Flacco was playing. It's kind of weird. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What are your favorite storylines ahead of the matchup between the Texans and the Colts coming up on Sunday? Also, Bobby Slowick yesterday met with the media. He explained the 3rd and 15 call on the final offensive series for the Houston Texans. Does it make you feel better? Does it make you feel worse about Bobby Slowick and the Houston Texans' philosophy on that series? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, a minute for AllstateSidingAndWindows.com. AllstateSidingAndWindows.com, they are the place that I always tell you to go to if you're looking to do anything with windows, siding, your front doors, because they're the best in the business. They are a family-owned and operated business, been in business for almost 50 years. They're loyal supporters of ESPN 97.5, and they're always focused on helping Houstonians. That's why I love them. Mary handles everything back at the offices. Her brother goes out and gives free estimates to anything that you're thinking about doing. So it doesn't cost you anything to get all the information, all the products that are available, and what is going to be the right products for you. Siding and windows both do the same thing. They protect your biggest investment. That's your house. They do it in a way that you can make sure that your family is safe, the contents are safe, and along the way, they're going to save you with energy efficient solutions to the fact that the windows that they put in and the siding that they put on are going to make sure that your house is protected from hurricane season. It's going to be protected in the heat of the summer and also when it gets cold in the wintertime. And your energy bills are going to show up to 30 to 40% savings. I put new windows in my house from Allstate, and I'm telling you right now, my energy bills went down 30%. and they look fantastic on the outside as well. And we are so glad that we did it. You can do it too. It looks so good. As a matter of fact, my neighbors saw my windows, had their windows done too, and they are ecstatic. You could be the next in line, but make sure that you go to Allstate Siding and Windows and make sure you realize that they do the free estimates so that you don't have to pay just to get information. All you got to do is go to their website, AllstateSidingandWindows.com, and check out all the products that they have to offer and call them. Set up an appointment. They'll come to you. They'll explain the siding and the windows and all the different ways that they think they can help and the products that would be best fit for your house and let you make the decision from there. It's fantastic because it doesn't cost you anything and you get to tap into their expertise to make the decisions that you need. Check them out today, AllstateSidingandWindows.com.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Ryan says, I just hope both of the teams try their best and have some fun out there. YMCA action.
Go Cubs!
That guy just wanted to have fun. He wants the Texans to bleed. He wants blood on the Colts' hands.
He's also got better accuracy Stroud's with the turf. Football than Anthony Richardson. I don't know if you saw the video.
He was 1 for 2.
Like I said, better than Anthony Richardson.
He was 1 for 2. I did see the video.
I don't know if Anthony Richardson could go 1 for 2.
What are those things? They're like those little circular lights that improve lighting.
Yeah, yeah. The ring lights.
Oh, like the
ring lights. They're called ring lights. That's the exact thing that they're called. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Brian. He had a little ball like I do, and he tried to throw the ball through the ring, and he missed. He hit the ring the first time and knocked it over, and then the second time he hit it, and he celebrated all.
Go Cubs!
Like
how I say that he celebrated, but he celebrated about as
you might get
much.
Thrown in jail again if you say what you're going to say.
He celebrated how I'm not willing to say over the air. He celebrated. I think y'all can get the gist. 1509 is Brian Cushing, the best linebacker in Texans history, overtraining notwithstanding. I haven't looked at like the numbers or anything, but I would want to go.
I was going to say D'Amico's in the conversation. Head, right?
Yeah, I would take D'Amico over. Yeah. I mean, Cushing was good, obviously rookie of the year, but I would take D'Amico.
Yeah, you talk about the fact that from they said almost day one that he became like the leader of the huddle and the captain and all the things that he was able to do.
JJ always
gives him his props.
8217, I would think D'Amico off the top of my head without any research on it whatsoever. 8217 says, didn't have my phone yesterday when you were discussing the burner account yesterday. My guess of who the account owner is on the Twitter is David Gow. David Gow would have me 8?
I can't see it.
I mean, I went
but he likes
he's too
Johnny
busy
G.
prepping Boston Gloss. I don't think he has time for that.
So you don't think you would have you ahead of Johnny G?
No.
You would be at least third?
Yeah. that's as low as I go.
I would be as low as 3. That's brilliant right. Blank over right. here.
I mean, Granato would definitely be number 1, though, if it was Gow.
I don't think I would be 8, though.
Or do you think you'd be on Gow's list?
I think I'd crack the top 5.
Okay.
I mean, I went from afternoons to drive time. I mean, if we're being honest.
True.
I didn't. We did. The show did, but Blankers was 3, so that goes without being said. I think it'd be top 5.
He listens
to bringing
our
Blankers
show.
Down.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope he listened to all of them. But.
Well, I mean, I don't know if he does, but I know that we know that he does because he texts us.
I don't know if that's the compliment we think that it is.
Oh, I think it is.
But yeah, I don't think it's Mr. Galley, 217. What a jerkish thing to say. But it is Friday. We'll have Mean Text coming up at 5:50 a little bit later. So Bobby Slowick explained his 3rd-and-15 call versus the Packers yesterday. Does this make you feel better or worse about that 3rd-and-15 call final offensive series that went to Tank Dell? Here's the OC.
Starting point is, man, that's a bad call, right? So we go into it thinking hopefully we get inside leverage or off corner, you know, like really what they've shown in similar situations is 3 guys across the end zone, off corner, inside leverage on Tank, gave him a route he scored on last year, really the same part of the field. And then instead we got outside leverage press, which is hard. Like that's not what the route's for. They doubled step. So really for the quarterback, you got to get all the way to the backside answers, which would have been good on that play, but he's already been hit 12 times. You know, he's not, it's everything trickles down in the NFL, right? So it's not always any like one given play. I think what CJ did in that moment was 100% right. Like we can't hold on to the ball. We got to get the ball out of our hands and look, be darned a little bit, you know? So to me, like it's the fact that we've had the protection issues early in the game that we're not confident being able to hang in the pocket.
Can we bash Sean real quick, Brian?
want to call him out?
Can I? Are you? I don't want to break any production bro code here.
Well, I will. In Sean's defense, I don't know what the quality of that audio was without him. You know, like when he pulled it. Like Texans on their website could have had audio of that quality.
No.
It's not without. It's not.
They
it's
are
not
going to have that
possibility.
Yes, it is.
No.
Yes, it is. I literally posted it.
Okay. All right.
They stream it live on YouTube, and the quality is 100 times better than that.
Okay.
Sean pulled this from somebody's Twitter instead of going to their account or their YouTube, Lazy Bones Mapes, and just lazily grabbed it instead of going the extra mile and pulling a little bit better sound quality. Sorry, Mapes, but it's true. It is true. I'm bashing him because he didn't take the extra step. That was terrible.
He's on the road.
Terrible quality. Who do we think?
No,
was,
he was here.
Who
oh,
do we
here?
Think? Who? Whose heavy breathing was that? Where I heard the heavy breathing more than I heard Slowick. Who was the heavy breathing?
Cody
713-780-3776. I don't see. Well, the Stoots post videos. I don't know if he does of press conferences. He might.
I don't know.
I don't think
I haven't seen him post videos.
I leave that to the big boys. I don't know.
Whose heavy breathing was that? That was filming off their phone, which is the audio that Mapes pulled instead of going to either HoustonTexans.com or Houston Texans on their YouTube.
Never.
Whose heavy
never
breathing was
win.
That? 713-780-37. That's my goodness. Anyways, sorry I got sidetracked. That irritated me a little bit.
A little bit, yes.
It irritated me a
triggered
little bit. Does that make you feel better or worse about Slowick's decision on 3rd and 15? The reason that he called that passing play on 3rd and 15.
I don't like it because no matter what he said, by the time he was done saying everything that he said, I questioned why he called it in the first place. If he knew that because of all the pressure all game long that CJ was under, the fact that he understands why CJ didn't, you know, play it out to look to the back angle or whatever, the back receiver. And he didn't want to hold on to it long enough. Well, then why are we calling it in the first place? Why aren't we addressing what everybody was addressing right after the game, which is if you're going to run it on the first two downs, just run it one more time, make them burn another timeout, and do the smart thing, especially if you're thinking now and what you're telling us is that there, you know, you knew that he had been hit enough, pressured enough, that you know that he had some issues. I just don't understand. I think it clouds it even more as to why you would make the play call.
See, that's like I can understand the pass call if somebody had a gun to your head and you had to call a pass play. Okay, well, like that makes some sense. In fact, I actually thought that whenever he ran the play was like they were trying to get a quick out right to Tank make a guy miss, run into the end zone. Like that I thought that's what Slowick was thinking. Now, I didn't ever agree with it. The problem that I have isn't the pass play specifically. It's the fact that you chose to pass the ball instead of running the ball. So does it make me feel better? No, you should have ran the ball. You shouldn't have been passing the ball. Force Green Bay to use their last timeout. If they don't want to use their timeout, take 40 more seconds off the clock. So if you're hell-bent, not even hell-bent, if you're being forced, you have your boss telling you you must run a pass play there. I'm okay with that pass play because, yeah, Tank Dell sometimes going to make the catch, beat his corner one-on-one, and get into the end zone. Like Slowick said, that it's happened in the past. The problem is you call it a pass. That's an obvious run situation, and it's not the first time that it's happened. It happened at the end of the Buffalo game or towards the end of the Buffalo game when you should have ran it, kicked the field goal, but no, you try to pass the ball in an obvious run situation, which is why he's passing it because everybody knows it's an obvious run situation, and it led to an intentional grounding. So this isn't the first time that Slowick has done it. Slowick's done it twice in the last 4 weeks.
I think you just get too cute. I think that's what it looks like. It looks like, you know, you thought you were going to pull one over and you were hoping for an opportunity to almost get lucky and have an opportunity for Tank to squeak into the end zone as opposed to being intelligent enough to say, hey, I got to rationalize what I'm trying to do here. One, because of the clock. Two, because of the timeouts. And three, because you just admitted that your quarterback has been under duress the entire game and might not go through all the routes to do what he has to do on this particular play. Then don't call it.
Yeah. And I know that the tendencies of what Green Bay is going to do in those spots, like, well, I know that they know them. I personally don't know them, but I know that Slowick and the Texans know the tendencies, so that's why you call that play. And I saw some other people say, well, they should have called a timeout when they got to the line and they saw the look. You're not going to know if a corner is going inside, outside leverage until the ball has been snapped. So you're not taking the timeout there. The problem was that he decided to pass the ball instead of running the ball in that situation. 713-780-ESPN. Ryan says whoever recorded that audio has a wake apnea. Maybe. That was some severe heavy breathing. I am a little concerned about who. Can we get to the bottom of this? Can you relate it? Mapes blocked me a long time ago. Can you text Mapes and ask him who's audio he pulled this from?
Mapes is probably taking a nap right now. So
he's taking a nap?
That's
no surprise after knowing what kind of audio he pulls.
I mean, he's an afternoon nap guy.
No surprise.
I don't know if he'll be awake right now.
That tracks that he's an afternoon napper by just lazily picking some random Twitter that has terrible audio.
He did have to get up earlier, so
Don't make excuses.
He's taking a nap because he had to be up like 3 hours.
And Brian,
4 hours
you're not
early.
Completely off the hook on this either. You heard that sound, and you see that I posted this with much better audio.
Oh,
how did I see that you posted that?
What do you mean? It's in the audio bin of our Rundy.
Oh, I didn't even look at it because we already had it.
You're not completely innocent either. Now, you did work two shifts today, so I'll make an excuse
for
you.
Mapes worked the morning show.
Mapes is inexcusable here. Inexcusable what Mapes did.
Wow.
Hopefully, he found it from somebody else.
No sympathy for the guy getting up early.
I'll let you know what he says once he wakes up from his nap.
Mapes doesn't surprise me at all. He's an afternoon napper after hearing the audio that he pulls. Mapes made the list, as Alex said. He did. He made the list. All right, what are the big
you
stories
just made the list
in the NFL this week? Jaden Daniels, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? The Tua's making his return. Are we okay with this, with the concussion issues, the head issues the Tua had? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I've really been out of shape right now. I'm worried about the station being sued for plagiarism. Not giving the credit to who the credit is deserved to with this video. Now, I just went on a quick little recon search to see who this video might belong to. I'm down to two. A texter thinks that it could be the General John McClane. He's not posting videos. Maybe the heavy breathing, but not that. He's not posting live video now. No, he's not posting
heavy
live
breathing
video.
Is in play.
I think that it's either Big Sarge, but I think it's more likely Aaron Wilson by listening to the audio.
Oh, it was, I guess.
Yeah, you guessed it right. I think. I'm like 70% sure it was Aaron's, 30% sure that it's Sarge.
Which makes sense. I think it's more likely Sean or whoever pulled it would have pulled from Aaron Wilson than they would have Sarge.
Live YouTube that exists. That's awesome, awesome audio quality. So 70% of our credit goes to Aaron Wilson, 30% of our credit goes to Big Sarge. So whoever's audio that belongs to, we're giving you credit. Please do not sue the radio station. And, you know, if you do, make sure that, you know, it's the suits upstairs and not the Killer Bees or whoever pulled the audio. Yeah, whoever pulled the audio. You can sue them. You're not going to get much.
Sean Mapes has probably 6 months. He can cover the fine. It's all right.
He's got afternoon nap money is what he's got. Who takes afternoon naps? People with money. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Eddie, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Eddie?
Eddie, go.
Hey, guys. Big fan of the Bees.
There's
really
one
love
of them.
Yeah. Your guys' insight and just a long time listener, big fan. I just had a question for you guys about the Texans. You know, last year we suffered a lot of injuries on the O line, and I feel like CJ Stroud, you know, still performed great. And you know, this year we don't have as many injuries on the O-line, and I'm just wondering, have defenses figured out C.J. Stroud with the blitzing, or is our O-line just this terrible? I just want to get y'all's thoughts.
Thanks for listening, Eddie. No, I mean, we talked about this yesterday, and we've talked about it at length throughout the week. The fact that C.J. had a bad game, we all know that, but also at the same time, CJ was one of the best at handling pressure going into the Green Bay game. And one of the things that we had highlighted was the fact that Jordan Love, and I specifically said, Jordan Love does not handle blitz packages very, very well. He has a tendency to get panicked. He throws in a double and triple coverage. He did that a couple times in that game. On the flip side, CJ has handled pressure very, very well. But this was like the perfect storm. I don't think anybody's figured out CJ or the line. The line, as we know, had issues communicating and responsibilities along the line. But I don't think this is something. This was in one game. Before we go and start pointing the finger at CJ, or you know, thinking that defense. No, our defense is, I mean, our team's going to watch the tape from last week and think that there's something there that they can capitalize on? Yes. But I think that's how the NFL works.
Yeah. Texter saying that Eddie is glazing. He might have been blazing, too. To me, it's not Stroud. Like, if you turn on the film and you watch, you know, what's going on, Stroud's making incredible throws. In fact, Stroud a lot of times is bailing out bad offensive line play. I think he's bailing out terrible situations, third and longs, and Stroud's avoiding pressure and buying time and finding receivers on scramble drills. Stroud's just as good as he was last year, and I think he's better in some ways. The offensive line has been atrocious, and you can't trust him. Like, you know, the Bobby Slowik, people are bashing Bobby Slowik. He didn't know how to call anything. No, he's worried about the offensive line. Like, he talked about it in that quote. Like, we have a quarterback that's getting hit, so if we have a quarterback that's getting hit, there are certain plays that we have in our playbook that we literally cannot run. If there's routes that are going to take time to develop, okay, well, you can't run those if your quarterback's getting hit with any sort of pressure. If you have, you know, 5-7-step drops, not too much 7-step drops these days, but those are pretty much eliminated from your playbook. And people are like, well, where's the shot plays? Where are the deep plays? There's a couple of factors that come into that. One, the Texans have seen a lot of cover two shells, so that makes it difficult to go deep. And then secondly, they don't feel like they have the time for these long routes to develop, so you have to, you know, go away from that. So I would say that 95% of the Texans' offensive struggles, and I might even be putting it lightly, is because of poor offensive line
and
play.
And we talked yesterday about the correlation, and I went through the fact that everything is correlated to the fact that it starts with the offensive line. Yeah, you can say that the quarterback has the ball in his hands to make the play, but if the line doesn't do their job, to your point, then the play doesn't have time to develop, and you can't have all the options on your route trees and the progressions on the play because of the fact that he doesn't have time to look at all the options or the best option that's there. And then you factor in also, this was, you know, you lose Nico Collins. Nico Collins was a guy that helped CJ, and why CJ was so good was that his security blanket in a lot of these situations was Nico. When we look at the deep balls, a lot of the times the deep ball was directed at Nico. Not that the other guys aren't capable, but they're still kind of adjusting on the fly now. Roles have changed a bit with Nico out of the lineup. So I think it's on the offense as a whole, but I'm not going to point a finger at C.J. Stroud and say that this starts with C.J.
Yeah, I'm on the offensive line being the reasons of struggle. Jaden Daniels, how much of a factor would him being out mean for this little one? I mean, obviously, it's not going to be a pick. It's not going to be a matchup of the number one team versus the number two, number one pick versus the number two pick, like everybody hoped that it would be. This game actually got flexed out of the noon start. It got flexed out of the noon start, moved to this, like, I guess. It was going to be a 3:30 game. Is this the Fox game of the week? Is this America's game of the week?
I'd have to check. I'm not sure.
I think they moved this to America's game of the week because it got flexed from the noon to like the 3:30.
I don't like that.
So, especially with Jaden Daniels being out. But they did it like 2 weeks ago thinking that it was Williams, the number one pick, Jaden Daniels, the number two pick. It was going to be this marquee matchup, and then Jaden Daniels isn't going to play, and it's going to be Marcus Mariota instead.
Now, he practiced today. And
did he?
Saying,
I thought he did.
I just saw on the ticker on ESPN that they said he practiced today, and it's possible that he plays. If I'm Washington and I'm off to the start that I'm off to, I could care less if everybody in America wants to see the two rookie quarterbacks go head-to-head.
I want D to know that I'm biting my tongue right now. I just want D to know that I'm biting my tongue for not saying couldn't care less.
Oh, you're going to care. Okay. The big thing to me is rib injuries, especially with a quarterback, but anybody in the NFL when you get hit all the time. But if you're a quarterback and you have a lingering rib injury, it's going to be a bigger problem as time goes on if you don't take care of it. The best thing to do is, look, Mariota did a very, very good job. Granted, it wasn't against a great team, but Mariota did his job very well last week while you were out. I would sit him again this week, make sure I can get him as close to healthy as possible before I put him back out there with not a care in the world about who we're playing and where it's placed on the TV schedule, because as a team, you're playing too well and you have too good of a record to put that in jeopardy for the long haul because you can let your quarterback out there too soon.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. And then Tua's head.
This thing to me is really pissing me off.
What's interesting about this is that Mike McDaniel said zero medical experts recommended that Tua retire.
Okay, that's fine. But the thing that really bothered me was the fact that when he came back and started this week and as he was going through the clearance and the protocol, that he did his press conference and they said, are you going to wear the cap? No, personal preference. At a certain point, with the amount of concussions you've had, whether the league has to get in the way and basically do what the player won't do, or just and because the league is going to, you know, it's going to be the focus of the league anyway, no matter what he decides to do. I can't see that there isn't some way that you can say, at least for a certain amount of time, you have to wear the freaking cap. Because he's had his dome has been under attack. He's susceptible to concussions as it is, and he wants to play. That's fine. You want to play, but if you're going to play, you have to wear something so that you don't have something more catastrophic or significant happen.
His body, his choice, Blankers.
I get that.
Mark says it's on the Commanders-Bears game. It's a CBS 3:30 game. So they moved it to their marquee afternoon thing. Let's sneak in. Is it Daryl here? 713-780-ESPN. It's white. White letters. Tough to see on a white screen. Daryl, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Daryl?
Yeah, what's going on, man? How y'all doing?
What's up?
Hey, look, I just want to talk about the Texans. If I'm D'Amico Ryans and stuff, I will keep a close eye on Keen Green this weekend, you know, see how he plays. And if he starts to struggle, if I was them, I wouldn't waste no time in pulling them. I know they probably ain't going to want to, but, man, look, they're going to have to. And what I would do is I would kick Deuce Scruggs back to left guard, and I'd bring Patterson in at center because they got to give C.J. Stroud some protection so, you know, he can get the ball downfield so, you know, the receivers can make plays, man, because, I mean, I don't think they can afford to be in denial this weekend and say, well, you know, the O-line, they're going to do a little bit better. You know, it's just communication issues. No, no, sir, it's time to get real. Say, okay, this is the problem. This is how we're going to fix it for right now. You know, sorry, we got to cut our losses. I know he's a first rounder, but he's not getting it done. You see what I'm saying?
Appreciate the call, Daryl. We'll respond to that on the other side. I think those are good ideas. I would do one other thing prior to doing that, but that would be my second choice. It doesn't seem like the Texans are going to do that this week. Also, when we come back, the World Series makes me feel what? It starts tonight. What does the World Series make you feel like? Because the Astros aren't in it. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5, KFNC, and 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms. At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms. At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.